I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where your tongue will be torn out by ravenous birds. I'm your host, Bob No Breath Maggie, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Hi, Bob. I know you from school. It's me, Henry Gilbert.
Who else?
Professor Chris Antistis, Cornucopia, Fantastic Food, Megorium, and Great American Steakery.
I'm already hungry. And who else?
Kat Bailey, and I am familiar with the works of Pablo Neruda.
As we all are. And today's episode is Bart Sells His Soul.
Professor B.J. Cornucopia's Fantastic Food Megorium, Great American Steakery.
I almost got it.
I did not think you'd have that, Chris.
Bob stole my no breath, so I had to struggle.
You gotta come up with more than one.
I can't believe nobody did Pog form. I was like, well, I'm not gonna do Pog form. Somebody else has it. Yeah.
Today's episode aired on October 8th, 1995, and as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in Simpsons history.
Boy, Bobby, Wishbone debuts on PBS. John Bobbitt uses plastic surgery to extend his severed dick 3 whole inches.
Well, why would you?
And Antonio Banderas will be number one when he takes down Sylvester Stallone and the Wachowski's assassins.
I feel like Dave Rudden should be here to tell us that Wishbone is dead. I'm sorry to break it to you guys, but I like Wishbone. It came on when I was way too old to be watching it, but I was like, Wishbone is a show that encourages reading, but it actually cuts out the middleman where it's like, this dog will tell you the story. Don't read the book. It now has a dog in it.
This dog will narrate the Cliff Notes. Like, yeah. Jesus Christ. And you kill Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
I was more of a fan of Ghostwriter.
Me too.
That was my favorite.
I didn't care for that much. Today's episode, I do want to mention, it is the last script written by Greg Daniels before he left to work on King of the Hill. I believe he supervised 22 short films about Springfield.
Yes, yeah. He was the, like, he kept track of everything and kind of glued it all together. But this was his last written episode. He would leave for King of the Hill. As the story goes, that Mike Judge was the creator of it, but then Fox partnered him with Greg Daniels, and Judge liked what Greg Daniels did so much that normally Greg Daniels, what he did would have gotten him the developed by credit, like, say, Sam Simon and James L. Brooks have on The Simpsons. But Mike Judge was like, you know what? No, you did so much work on this, you're co-creator.
That's
and he gave him the co-creator credit, as in meaning millions more dollars.
I'd say billions at this point. So I want to talk about Greg Daniels real quick, because two events in his life kind of form what happens in this episode. So he tells he's on the commentary, does a much better job than I will, but to give you the short version is, in Greg's life, he was Milhouse. He looks like Milhouse when he was a kid. He was being bullied at his boarding school, so he's a little Richie Rich kid. But he was being bullied by someone who kicked him with sharp cowboy boots. So he was a philosophy guy. He ran the philosophy club. So he tricked this bully.
He does deserve to be bullied.
He really does.
If he runs a philosophy club.
So he tricked this bully into selling him his soul on a piece of paper for 50 cents. And then after that happened, he coached people into telling the bully, are you sure you want to do that? Do you really think this could be your one chance? You could go to hell for this. So by the end, the bully wanted his soul back, and Greg raised the price drastically. But the bully bought his soul back on a piece of paper, and that's what formed the basis of this episode, Greg tormenting a bully.
It's wonderful to know it's based on something so specific.
Yes. I love that he says that he did it more than once,
yes.
And then eventually he's like, I then remembered who's the only person who makes money off of selling souls, and that is the devil. So I should probably stop.
The only thing worse is an executive producer.
Well, I think a TV show. I don't mean to judge it with my cold atheist heart, but that it comes off as one of the more spiritual Simpsons episodes.
Oh yeah,
it is.
If it's not based on an actual story that Greg Daniels,
well, Simpsons is an alternate universe where God actually exists.
It's true.
God not only exists, but intervenes, as we have seen in canonical episodes.
It is a cruel God of the world of The Simpsons, but that's how to make jokes funnier, is if God is cruel.
The second Greg Daniels anecdote relates to the first thing that happens in this episode, in which Greg was trying to get close to a devout Baptist woman. I believe he was a non-believer, probably still is, and he decided to go on a spiritual retreat with her, a weekend retreat. That girl missed the bus, so he was there alone and brooding. Wow.
Couldn't even get an attempt to get laid on this trip.
And at a service, they were asking, like, what hymn should we sing? And he, being a jerk, he said, Stairway to Heaven. And they looked for it for minutes, and they were really mad when they found out it wasn't an actual hymn. So he's both Bart and Milhouse. Daniels in this episode. So thank you, Greg Daniels.
I love Greg Daniels. I think it really, the show is, I think, more damaged by losing Greg Daniels than Conan O'Brien.
I mean, you would go on to see just how influential Greg Daniels was to comedy with both King of the Hill and The American Office.
Yeah.
Or sorry, The Office, An American Workplace. Yes. I'm stealing that from Scott Aukerman, by the way.
Greg Daniels is a very, like, prolific dude who, he never forgot his roots on The Simpsons either. Not just going into animation with King of the Hill, but on The Office, there was a Homer Simpson doll in The Office and on the show as well. But
and his time with Conan, the mug Greg Daniels gave him is still on Conan's desk on every episode of the show.
Hmm. Yeah, I also saw, I remember on the commentary, Daniel said he was going to make this an episode about race in Springfield at first, but...
Yeah, maybe then, don't do that.
Yeah, I wonder what Simpsons would have to say about race.
In 1995, I don't know.
I mean, they handled sexual harassment so well, so... No, they didn't.
Go back to Homer Badman.
It's funny, we recorded... funny's the wrong word. It's interesting we recorded that right before every Hollywood person was revealed to be a sexual harasser.
That was right before Me Too?
Yeah, pre-Weinstein. Yeah.
It was pre-Weinstein, pre-all the... But yes, this start out here, though, Bart has his own little trick in.
And now, please rise for our opening hymn, In the Garden of Eden by I, Ron Butterfly.
I love Bart's satisfied singing.
Hey, Mark, remember when we used to make out to this hymn?
Entire solo.
Oh, won't you come with me?
They're dying at this point.
Wait a minute. This sounds like rock and or roll.
Oh, boy. So good.
Bart basically kills the organ player.
It was 17 minutes later.
Yeah, I actually had heard of In a God of Evita when this episode aired.
Really?
Really?
Because it was one of my mom's favorite go-to joke songs. She would always say, call into the oldie station and request In a God of Evita, because they would never play it on the radio because it's a
17 minutes and 5 seconds long.
Wasn't there a previous joke about this on The Simpsons? Like, long version.
The extra long version of In a God of Evita.
Was
when the boogeyman Michael Jackson came to town.
Oh,
he was
okay.
Not made up to scare children. That's why they'd have you believe.
Yeah, Bart interacted with him.
Yeah, I know. He kind of forgot his love of Michael Jackson.
If you can see the sheet music, you can see that it says "In the Garden of In the Garden of Evita" by Iron Butterfly.
Yeah.
So it, Reverend Lovejoy, I didn't even bother to look at the title.
What does that even mean?
Do we know the history of this?
No.
So,
because I always thought it was shocking that Bart knew this song. I'd never heard
it. It's a very
this,
clever plan.
And it's my favorite part about that he's singing the loudest.
For someone presumably born in 1985 in this episode, he's pretty savvy to classic rock, but it's a 1968 psychedelic rock song by Iron Butterfly. It is 17 minutes long, and it takes up the entire side of that album by the same name. And apparently it was written by a dude who had drunk a gallon of wine. And he wrote it while drunk, and then his slurred words became the title of the song. Sounds made up.
It does.
It's been confirmed almost everywhere I read. It sounds apocryphal, but it really happened.
Wow.
And there is a 2-minute-and-53-second radio version.
Don't listen to that.
But it's a drum solo. It's a very long drum solo.
Is it a drum solo or just...
Well, it's I guess, a solo in general.
Yeah,
it's
it feels like prog rocky.
Yeah, it's like early prog rock in 69 or 68.
And you will hear it. I never heard the song before this, and now it's like stock for like when anybody accidentally trips. Like this song just kicks in. I think what was it? Freddy's Dead? I think it comes in there. Sorry, we just did Elm Street Nightmare.
It's a catchy song. I mean, and I'm glad Iron Butterfly got paid off for this.
Yeah,
too.
But it like screams psychedelia at this point. So it's
my first exposure to the song was in the songs in the Key of Springfield. I had not seen the episode,
I
was like, oh, this is kind of catchy. And so I found the actual song and discovered that it was in fact 17 minutes long, and also it's not a very good song to listen to.
Those are all the lyrics. You heard all of them. There's not a lot of singing in the song.
And then they just had to stand the entire time as the... I would think that the organ player should have been very suspicious when her music sheet was handed to her was probably like 50 pages long. It's an
entire book of music for one song.
But it's fun. They got some good fun out of Lovejoy being a fuddy-duddy of like rock and or roll. And then we get to see some good old-fashioned Christian guilt.
Mm.
I know one of you is responsible for this, so repeat after me. If I withhold the truth, may I go straight to hell, where I will eat naught but burning hot coals and drink naught but burning hot cola.
Where fiery demons will punch me in the back.
Where my soul will be chopped into confetti and strewn upon a parade of murderers and single mothers.
Where my tongue will be torn out by ravenous birds.
Bart did it! That part right there!
Milhouse!
Milhouse, you did the right thing. Bart, come with me for punishment. You too, Snitchy. I want you to clean every one of these organ pipes that you have befouled with your popular music.
Murderers and single mothers together at last.
That's pretty rough because, I mean, hellfire is a very real thing to a lot of people. So to have kids reciting that, and they do believe every single word that, I mean, you saw Milhouse's reaction to that. I was like, oh my God, there is actually literally going to be a bird that tears out my tongue.
It's the brainwashing of children to make them afraid.
Bart being dark. Very bored reciting that, you could tell they've said it many times before.
You can tell where we stand on this subject, by the way.
Yes, yeah, no, we're not.
I mean, the episode
Sorry,
does
Christian
too.
Listeners,
the episode is taking this stance as well. I'm not going to apologize. I refuse to apologize.
Well, the episode... kind of plays fast and loose.
It takes an interesting stance in this. I'm sure we'll talk about this a little later.
Yeah. But when I think of Milhouse's My Tongue Will Be Ripped Out by Ravenous Birds, that it reminds me of that terrifying documentary Jesus Camp, where you can see these poor children who are just like praying. So are they like, please, please don't send me out. Like, this is horrible to do to children. This is abuse.
I'm just reminded of a story of like somebody saying, yeah, I was told that my parents were burning in hell by my pastor or whatever. And that tormented me for like years and years and years. It's rough.
Now, this is pretty cruel of Lovejoy to make the kids feel that, just to find out who did it, which, honestly, should have jumped to the conclusion it is either Nelson or Bart.
And it was Bart's mistake to tell Milhouse, because I don't think Milhouse was even an accomplice to this plan.
He probably knew where a Xerox machine was.
It's true.
Milhouse is party to most of his plans. He was party to Buttzilla. He was party to the Lost Dutchman's mine. Milhouse is usually
these
in
pranks
the
are not funny though if you've ever pulled them before unless you tell somebody that you've done
true
because someone's
gotta brag.
And one last thing about that Ravenous Birds line. So when this season began, I remember they had an ad that was just like, the new season of Simpsons is starting, and interspersed in it were clips from a lot of the first few episodes that would include the Treehouse of Horror and scenes from this. And when they played that clip of the Ravenous Birds thing just on its own, that it sounds like it's so scary looking. Same with the dinosaur eating Lisa. That I was like, I was sure these clips were from Treehouse of Horror. So when this episode came out, I was like, oh, this isn't Treehouse.
Out of context, the slow pan across the chanting children to the bird in the window is kind of creepy.
It's generally a creepy episode. But so as they're cleaning this, we get to hear all about Bart's non-believing and also not believing in Michael Jackson, who just 4 years ago, he was his biggest fan. He loved Michael Jackson.
He moonwalked.
But every religion says there's a soul, Bart. Why would they lie? What would they have to gain?
Yes.
I don't hear scrubbing.
Well, if your soul is real, where is it? It's kind of in here. And when you sneeze, that's your soul trying to escape. Saying God bless you crams it back in. And when you die, it squirms out and flies away.
What if you die in a submarine at the bottom of the ocean?
Oh, it can swim. It's even got wheels, in case you die in the desert and it has to drive to the cemetery.
How can someone with glasses that thick be so stupid? Listen, you don't have a soul. I don't have a soul. There's no such thing as a soul.
Fine. If you're so sure about that, why don't you sell your soul to me?
How much you got?
$5?
Deal. There you go. One soul.
Pleasure doing business with you.
Anytime, chum.
I think Milhouse came up with the idea for It Follows in that little that little pitch.
Yeah, I love that little kiddie kind of thing of saying, like, oh, it's got wheels, and it can swim,
that
too.
Just self-assured and bullshit. I wish I could get there again.
Wild speculation is the foundation of all religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
I've listened to everybody be like, well, what about this? Well, I imagine that it must be like this. You're just making that up.
Ultimately, we can't
heaven's
know.
Heaven's probably this. Like, no.
I was about to say, yeah, this is not canon.
But that I think my favorite critique of religion in this whole episode is, what do they have to gain? That's
counting
the sound
money.
Of money. Yeah.
Pretty heavy-handed, but also pretty great.
Yeah. It made me laugh.
It's a big like gut punch.
Yeah. I also love the churchy echo when Bart says, there's no such thing as a soul. Just like, that's how blasphemous Bart is.
It's
being
very well staged.
Yeah, it's great.
So the thing that's interesting, I think, is that it establishes Bart at the beginning as a huckster. Like, he is pulling pranks on the church. He's tricking Milhouse into giving him his soul. And he's kind of he's a kid with no morals or no ethics, right? And the rest of the show is basically him paying penance for that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. He learns a lot of ethical lessons, I suppose, or morals. What's the difference? I can't say it.
Well, I think that people who say, well, if you don't believe in God, there's no way that you can have morals, and I strongly disagree with that, because I have a pretty staunch code of ethics here.
Yeah,
and
you're a Star Trek viewer.
If the only reason you're a good person is fear of punishment, that's kind of fucked up. You know, it's just like, I can't go to hell, I better be good.
But if you're looking at Bart, like, he doesn't have any morals, he doesn't have any ethics, and so this is him kind of being punished for that.
Kat, did you stop believing in God after seeing Star Trek V?
Oh, boy.
I stopped believing in God when I discovered that God really hated lesbians.
Oh, yeah.
He'll do that.
Tells you
no,
that.
No,
yeah.
He's very specific. It's only the men.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that reminded me of being a kid was the conversation between the Hibberts about going out to dinner. So I guess I was a little upper middle class compared to other people.
Like me.
We would go out to dinner at strip mall restaurants like these, theme restaurants like these, semi-regularly. I would also find out later it's because my dad... And my mom didn't like cooking, and my dad was very unhappy being at home and wanted to just go out to exciting places to eat.
My parents never did, except for one time, one place, Tuesday night at Pizza Hut, where you get a free Nickelodeon, where kids get free personal pizzas.
I remember
that. You got a pitcher of Pepsi.
And a pitcher of pitcher of soda, a shitty pizza, and hopefully a little stamp on your book it card.
We went to Applebee's, we went to TGI Fridays, we went to Outback Steakhouse, Bennigan's.
Only while traveling.
Spaghetti Factory. All
we didn't have a Bennigan's where I grew up. But we had an Applebee's.
Oh, Turkey Tom?
We did have an Applebee's and a TGI Fridays and a Fuddruckers, which we would all
go to. I didn't have a Fuddruckers. I never went to Fuddruckers until I moved here.
I loved Fuddruckers.
We went before MSD, didn't we? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
In my shit town, we had none of this stuff until a few years later. There was there was not even a Walmart anywhere near us.
The term I heard used to describe them, I thought was great, is brass bar restaurants.
Oh, brass bar. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I never heard that.
I never heard that until the moment when I heard it, like 15 years ago, and it perfectly described all of them.
It makes sense.
All dying.
I remember the Applebee's, because millennials don't want to eat there.
The food
millennials
is disgusting.
Are killing it.
And everything inside of them is wet. Yeah. Like, everything has just been wiped off with a rag. It's really weird.
You know, I just ate at a Cheesecake Factory this weekend in a celebratory meal with my boyfriend. I ate, like, 8,000 calories. Yeah. And felt disgusting afterwards.
It is a factory.
And we went to TGI Fridays over the holidays because they're open Christmas Eve. It's so odd when you get like a receipt back for your drink that has like the scent on it, because the bars around here just like, it's just $6, $8. That's all it is. Like $14.93. Like, Jesus, man. This is coming out of your tip.
It wasn't until I was in my 20s that I discovered what actually good food was. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to places like Applebee's and went, isn't very good at all.
Look, they're not... Chili's, all those types of Ruby Tuesdays. They're not particularly great, or Olive Garden. They're not particularly good, but I feel warm nostalgia eating at them. And
I'm the guy who feels that for McDonald's.
Yeah. We also live in a place where those places are not allowed. So all the places I eat are just local. True. Like, there's local chains or just one local restaurant.
I think the thing is that they hand you a plate of food. First of all, it's a massive plate of food. Yeah. So the portions are insane.
Eat
and they're kind of tasteless. I don't drink soda anymore, so... when I was a
kid. Is it because the soda's too cold? Or
No, I just don't like soda.
What do you got against deep-fried ranch?
Exactly. So I inevitably come out feeling really gross. The beer is not very good, and it's actually kind of overpriced for what it gives you.
At all those places, the best possible beer is Blue Moon. Yeah. That's the best, highest quality beer you can get. And that's like a
Your parents haven't heard of this.
No. Ooh, that's got flavor in it.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
I want to say, this is the first time that we see Hibbert's entire Cosby-esque family.
Yeah.
And this family features one of two doppelgangers in this episode. So the Theo in his family is the same as the Theo we see on the Cosby Show when A Star Is Born, except they're wearing different clothes.
Wow.
They are the same design. So he stole a Theo.
Well, maybe you guys would have loved themed restaurants.
The Rudy's different,
sorry. To Moe's and they were dank.
Oh.
Ah, natural light! Get it off me! Get it off me!
No, I'm sorry. I thought this was a family restaurant.
Oh, it is. It is. Just, pull them stools up to the pool table.
Daddy, this place smells like tinkle.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll just go to the Texas Cheesecake Depository.
Everybody is going to family restaurants these days. Seems nobody wants to hang out in a dank pit no more.
You ain't thinking of getting rid of the dank, are you, Mo?
Maybe I am.
Oh, but Mo, the dank! The dank!
Yeah, family restaurants. That's where the big bucks are.
So I've been to a place like Moe's, and when she says, this place smells like tinkle, I can totally imagine it, because I used to go to Santa Clara for San Jose Earthquakes games, and there was one bar, and it was called The Hut, and I would walk in, and I would immediately be overwhelmed by the smell of urine. And the beer would all be very warm, so you didn't want to get it out of the tap, because it would be flat and warm. You wanted to get it out of bottles, but it was literally the only place to drink, so you would go out into the back area to stand by the table, so you didn't have to smell the inside.
I don't like tinkle smell, but I love bars with a lot of good dank in them. Like I do the Carl thing, the dank. The dang.
As a young man smoking pot, I relish the opportunity to
go in a dark place.
No, to someone like
to say the dank.
Hey, who's rolling this thing? The dank, the dank. Like just the what? The dank.
The natural light thing, by the way, is something that I say all the time.
Yeah. I hear it weird now. Also, having grown up in the same pot period, drinking a lot of natural light. That they're in a bar, and they're it's like the only time they've name checked a real beer.
They should be afraid of that piss water.
It is ocean water, to the taste.
So this episode was directed by Wes Archer, who would also leave The Simpsons for King of the Hill to be the series director of the animation. Though a little after, he'll finish out season 7. And he's currently the series director on Rick and Morty, the previously mentioned Rick and Morty. But there's an interesting fight that's going on, even still on the commentary for it, but that happened during the production of the episode, is that Oakley Weinstein think Mo looks wrong. But Wes Archer's like, no, this is him on the model sheet. This is how he's supposed to look.
So Mo is missing a left tooth in the upper part of his mouth for most of this episode. And there were a lot of retakes in this episode, too.
It is distracting to see it because he doesn't normally miss a tooth, I think. I don't know.
My theory is that it was a power move by Wes Archer, who had done episodes with Mo and them before. I think he was like, this is how I want Mo to look. And I'm going to make him look like this for an entire episode. And if I do, it'll stick. Like, I want Mo to be missing a tooth. Which apparently he's missing that one tooth on the model sheet. But also you get the problem is when the Simpsons smile, it's a bunch of vertical lines.
Yeah.
When Mo smiles, the missing tooth
goes away.
There's now a tooth there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense visually.
Maybe Wes Archer was playing a power move there because he's like, I've been here since the shorts.
Yeah.
You new kids aren't telling me how to draw Mo.
Especially in the commercial where he's forced to smile at the camera. All of his teeth are there.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like
true.
All vertical lines. So
he definitely looks more ugly than usual in this one, Mo does. Which he's kind of supposed to, I think, to make it even more weird that he's being friendly and having to be nice to people.
I'm going
to
be an iconoclast. I wish the missing tooth Mo stuck around.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Man.
It's good for his character.
Make him uglier.
Mm-hmm. What about you want him to get back his black hair, too? Is that a...
Ooh, that's a step too far.
Uglier. Gray hair.
Gray
missing
hair.
Tooth.
Missing tooth.
Well, he should be in his 60s, so he should have his chestnut hair. But Maggie, also, it's almost too dark to read it, but I do like Maggie sucking on the umbrella, the drink umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
and then he's got to put a coaster under it. So, did you ever buy those dinosaur sponges as a kid?
Fuck, I did.
Yeah, and they're disappointing.
They are very disappointing. Though I never even like sprayed them with water. You're told to put them in a glass, put them in a glass of water.
I did, and
they'll grow 10% bigger.
It alleges 500%. I tried to look up if there's anybody who made these specifically, but mostly they're called Magic Grows, but a billion different other names. Bought almost exclusively in museum gift shops in the shape of dinosaurs. You can put it in your mouth.
They're the closest thing to like a smart toy you can to get your parents to buy you at the gift shop. Like
the stupidity of single-use toys.
So Bart's imagination kind of reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes.
There
was a storyline that I always think of where Calvin ordered a beanie that had a little spinning propeller blade, and half the comics are him imagining all the cool things he's going to do. He's going to like fly away, and he finally gets it, and he accidentally breaks it, and his dad fixes it, and he finally gets it to work, and then of course it's just going, and he's like, what?
I love that. Yeah, I you have those dreams so many times as a kid of like, this toy is going to change everything.
So Bart's ultimate plan is to get Lisa wet with water. It's very much like his ultimate plan to get Allison Taylor wet with the hose, giving her the spraying of a lifetime.
I remember being nervous because we'd already seen Imagine Skinner being cut in half. Like, what's he going to do to his sister? I'm like, oh, nothing. That's
scooping
sweet.
Funny smelling water all over me.
He could do so much better with $5, though. I mean, it's kind of annoying to me that he spent it on those sponge things.
$5 in 95. That's like value meal.
Yeah,
he could have bought 3 comic books at the comic.
Yeah, would have lasted him longer.
Him not caring, I probably would have had Bart's same attitude, but I also would have been like too much of a chicken to sell it because it'd be like, just to hedge my bets, just in case.
That's called Pascal's wager, everybody. I'm going to believe in God just in case.
I mean, recanting on my deathbed, Simpsons taught me that, too. Yeah. That was my plan. I have a similar feeling about throwing away toys ever, because I think, like, what if Toy Story is real? I'm killing this toy. Like, what am I doing?
You need more shelves, man. That's all you need. Toys make me happy. This room is a testament to that.
I just put up a bunch of toys on the shelves. Got a lot of compliments from it. I don't have many Simpsons toys, or close to any, really.
Still buying them.
Also, my cat never eats bugs. I don't know what this cat eating bugs.
My cat totally eats bugs. He will hunt the bug as it's flying around and then grab it with his paw and eat it. It's pretty impressive.
Wow, man. I can't recall my cats ever eating bugs. They hunted lizards in Florida.
Like, well, there's lots of protein in them. Protein and fat in those bugs.
You see bugs as odd, but not hunting lizards.
I guess not. No, I mean, that's
poor. A cat coming in with 3 lizards in its mouth.
It is funny to see that Bart gets very, like, physical proof that his soul changed things immediately.
Stupid automatic door.
Thank you, door!
Some ice cream guy's gonna see that, and it'll blow his mind!
Let me try.
Way to breathe, no breath.
This is getting weird.
Sanjay, to the entrance with the Windex. Sanjay, to the entrance with the Windex.
So the Simpsons has poisoned my mind, to which every time I go through an automatic door, I think, thank you, door. That happened today when I was at Target. But I never say it.
Wow, Ron.
As a little kid, I thought they were making Bart into a vampire, because he's scaring pets, and he seems to have no like physical embodiment.
He is a demon. Yeah. He became a demon.
Yeah. I love that sound of the intercom that has never been used at the Quickie Mart ever again, I don't think.
It's small enough where Sanji could hear him if he just said, Sanjay, get over here.
Yes. But it's much funnier if you hear it over an intercom sound.
It heightens the humiliation.
I used to work for a convenience store, as it happens. Mm. We had a button.
Oh.
So you'd press the button, and if they were in the back, it would just buzz them to come up.
Okay, Sanjay is usually in the back at the Quickie Mart. You don't see him all that often.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably putting things away in the cooler, or he's handling the accounts or something like that.
He could be tending to the garden.
He's the bookkeeper there is what I want to think in my headcanon.
Also, he has children, unlike Apu at this point. So, so then Mo is trying to think of a name, and we get a return of my favorite Barney catchphrase.
So, come on, I need a name that says friendly all-American cooking.
How about Chairman Moe's Magic Walk? I like it!
Nah, I want something that says people can have a nice, relaxing time.
I got it! Madman Moe's Pressure Cooker! I like it!
Hey, How about Uncle Moe's Family Feed Bag?
I hate it.
Oh, boy. The deep fry is here. I got it used from the Navy. You could flash fry a buffalo in 40 seconds.
40 seconds? But I want it now.
That's so my favorite line.
That was from the USS Missouri, by the way, a real battleship. It fought in the battles of Iwo Jima and Okinawa, the Korean War, and Operation Desert Storm, and it was decommissioned in 1992. But most importantly, Cher's video, If I Could Turn Back Time, was filmed on the USS Missouri.
What?
And it really made the Navy mad. They're
holy
like, that strumpet strutting around in her little stockings.
I believe the USS Missouri was also where the Japanese surrendered to the U.S.
Huh. Okay.
Wow. On a boat?
This is definitely a very old man kind of reference that Oakley and
I have been on the USS Missouri, by the way.
I believe
it.
Yes.
And what did you flash fry when you were Man, that's I've not.
Wait, why? What? Where? More cat. More.
Forgive me. I don't remember where exactly it was. I might have been in Hawaii because I remember I went. Whenever I'm traveling, I usually end up in a World War II museum or something because I'm a history nerd.
Yeah.
I like history. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, cool, a submarine, or oh, cool, an old battleship. So I recall I was like, oh, the USS Missouri, they surrendered, the Japanese surrendered to America here. So I went on the ship and learned about its history and everything.
Wow.
And no, I did not see the deep fryers. But
I don't know a lot about war because I'm not a weirdo. But I was surprised to see a ship built for World War II was in like Desert Storm. I guess they last for a while.
Yeah. Well, that was the return of Barney's catchphrase of "I like it."
That's great.
If you guys have gotten texts from me, it's one of my favorite things. Is if I'm going to give somebody
an affirmative,
when anybody says like, "Well, should we do this today?" I like it.
He literally did that to me yesterday.
Yes.
That's from the B Sharps, right?
Yeah. It's okay. Handsome Homer Simpson +4, +3. I like it. That, and now this is another Barney I like it from underneath a sheet as they're building the place around him. Barney's pretty funny in this episode.
He's good. He's a good set decoration in this episode.
I also think Skinless in Seattle is maybe my favorite Itchy and Scratchy short or one
of them.
I
forgot the space needle only goes into his eye a little bit.
It's perfect. It gets stuck in his iris, and he runs around with it. It's just so perfect.
So I'll confess to having a really hard time watching Itchy and Scratchy episodes because the violence is always turned up just a little too high, and I'm squeamish.
Oh,
and having like the space needle thing come down right in his eye, I'm like, ah!
I think the problem
eye stuff is a lot for me.
Yeah, the violence is too specific. It's not like a head exploding or like someone turning into a skeleton. It's actually something that could happen to you.
It's
like
not Looney Tunes. It's really gory. Yeah. My God. This one's pretty mild by like most comparisons.
Further than Woody Woodpecker most of the time.
And this episode, I think, taught many people about the work of the Nobel Prize winning poet Pablo Neruda.
I know that's funny, but I'm just not laughing.
Pablo Neruda said laughter is the language of the soul.
I am familiar with the works of Pablo Neruda.
I think we should do a test.
Oh, doo doo doo. No, I'm just walking. Oh!
Well, nope. I don't feel a thing. That's creepy, Bart. I think you really did lose your soul.
Good boy. Oh! Oh! Who's doing that?
Nothing.
Oh! Help me! Oh! Why isn't anybody out? Help it!
That's so great.
Yeah, the who's doing that got my favorite, my heartiest laugh.
They're both looking worried, and in the center is Homer's ass being bitten by a dog.
I just love, too, his vocalizing. Oh, I'm walking.
Yeah, that's got to be an ad-lib. It really feels like Dan Castellaneta.
It goes just long enough.
Yeah, that's another act break, right? There are two great act breaks in this episode.
The act break, just the way, and Homer's the key to both of them, but then he just fell. He's like, why is no one helping me?
It was the ideal joke where it went long enough that it became funny, or even funnier, but also took up a little bit of extra time.
Yes. So Pablo Neruda
The Nine-Tailed Fox.
Before we get to this, I apologize for mispronouncing his last name. I know it's Neruda, not Naruto.
Pablo Neruda.
Yeah. he was... And finally going to be the chieftain of the city.
His son, Pablo Boruto.
So he was a
dirty
Chilean
communist.
Yeah, he was a Chilean socialist politician slash poet, and who may have been killed by Pinochet. Mm. There's still some guess on that. But he was also a key plot point in How I Met Your Mother, because one of his poems was a favorite poem of both Bob Saget and the mother on
Bazinga.
The show.
Bazinga.
That is not the same show.
It might as well be. I know they're different. I know one's way better.
But I do have a selection of Pablo Neruda, a poem of his, read by Glenn Close.
I like for you to be still. It is as though you were absent. And you hear me from far away, and my voice does not touch you. It seems as though your eyes had flown away, and it seems that a kiss had sealed your mouth. As all things are filled with my soul, you emerge from the things filled with my soul. You are like my soul, a butterfly of dream. And you are like the word melancholy.
Too highbrow.
Of all the complaints we've gotten on any podcast ever, I think the most is going to come from playing a poem.
That was Jessica Lovejoy, right?
Yeah, it had the music from Amelie in the background. I love that soundtrack.
My parents' screensaver as the visuals.
All of Naruto's work, like, it was translated in English. That is not
even the sexy ninjutsu. It's my last Naruto joke. Last one. I don't have any more references.
I'm out too.
But yeah, so that's who he is. He won. He died in 73, I believe.
Yeah, murdered by the Pinochet regime.
Yep, likely. Like, who knows for sure?
From the sound of it, they're like, the Chilean government was like, yeah, he was probably murdered.
Well, I don't think Pinochet would do anything wrong. He was supported by America. Like, so I don't really see.
Like, all the best dictators.
Yeah, all the best dictators are supported by America, and if they're going to take down communists, then they must have been good.
Yeah. You know, omelets breaking eggs. You know how it works.
Yeah, I think this episode shows another of Oakley Weinstein's early favoritism towards some characters, and Milhouse is one of them. And this is Milhouse coming into his own for sure. And this is like extra smart Milhouse here.
If the Ayatollah can't have it, no one can.
You know, Milhouse.
Yes?
Now you're getting tired of that soul, huh?
No.
Suppose someone wanted to buy it from you.
Oh, you want to buy it back, Bart? Sure, no problem. $50.
What?
Who's stupid now, huh?
Good laugh there.
That insane guffaw. So Milhouse going, yes. That is an impression of Frank Nelson, who played characters on the Jack Benny program. And eventually they turned him into a Simpsons character called Mr. Costington. Mm-hmm. He had a stroke. So here's a compilation of yeses that eventually turns into the Simpsons compilation of yeses. So we can shut it off then. So here's Frank Nelson.
Imagine you make quite the career out of saying that line.
Yeah.
Well, I think what you like, it started in radio. And you didn't know exactly who that character would be, but he'd be the clerk at like every store. And if you noticed in that clip, he's like lifting his head up, letting the audience know,
surprise,
it is me.
He's gonna talk like this.
Yes, I'm on this now.
Because even on TV, he'd be standing there for like minutes with his back turned to the camera.
I mean,
I'm bothering Flip Wilson.
I mean, I know nothing about wrestling, but I thought it was preposterous. A wrestler had the catchphrase of "Yes," but now I realize it's totally fine.
Yes.
Who is that guy, Henry? Tell me,
Daniel Bryan.
I thought so.
Yes. Yes. The
yes.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I also like in that video you can see him aging and getting fake mustaches and wigs on. But
so when Milhouse is playing his war games, I just want to observe that he's about 15 years behind on American enemies at that time. Yes, we were still at odds with Iran, but Iraq was the new hotness in 1995.
Yeah. Like, I think he's poor and has the discount patriotic toys. and just
didn't even have G.I. Joes. G.I. Joes were still a thing in 1995.
Yeah, fighting robots instead of Ayatollahs.
Yeah, and this was one of two instances in this episode in which someone remembers that Milhouse had a white piece of paper with him. As if that's something you take note of. Like, yes, he did have a white piece of paper with him.
Without the backstory
well,
of like...
weird.
Without the backstory of the commentary, which I heard years ago, This is the meanest Milhouse has ever been. Because it's like, only him saying that they played up the value of the soul. It seems like Milhouse knew Bart was coming and is playing up.
I liked his "Who's Stupid Now?" They're kind of like dead. He's like, "See, he said I was stupid. Now who's stupid?"
Yeah, Bart kind of chewed out Milhouse, so he's getting his comeuppance.
It's not a surprise, also, that if nerds are always in a position of like having to take it, so when they get put into a position of power, they tend to overplay their hand a little bit.
Are you describing the last 4 years?
Yeah.
I bet if he had said $10, Bart would have scrounged up the money, but instead he said $50.
There's too many nerds out there who their response to being bullies was to become a worse bully.
My turn.
That's not the lesson you're supposed to learn from being bullied, but I love his dorky, sinister laughter. Yeah. It's great. Yes.
He got a taste of it. He got a taste of the power.
I think these writers love writing for Milhouse more than Bart because they were Milhouse, not Bart. None of them were Bart as kids. Like, Al Jean was certainly not Bart as a kid.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
she
was Milhouse. And this goes straight into the perfect commercial for a local eatery. Like, I love it.
If you like good food, good fun, and a whole lot of crazy crap on the walls, then come on down to Uncle Moe's Family Feed Bag.
At Moe's, we serve good old-fashioned home cooking, deep-fried to perfection.
Now that's Moe like it. So bring the whole family, mom, dad, kids, and no old people. They're not covered by our insurance. It's fun. And remember our guarantee. If I'm not smiling when your check comes, your meal's on me. Uncle Mo.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Sounds good.
I love the quote "crazy crap on the walls" because I had not been in these restaurants in 1995. Mm-hmm. Having been in them many times after this, it's like, yes, it's always the most generic Americana stuff. That's like, you need to have a lifesaver on the wall.
Tricycle.
The Three Stooges playing golf. That photo. Marilyn
Albert Einstein with his tongue sticking out.
Yes, exactly.
And go up and touch it next time you're there. I'm like, oh my god, this is plastic molded. Like, this is just fake anyway.
I remember the one that sticks out to me the most in recent memory was at the Red Robin that Chris and I would usually go to at our
bottomless prize. You got it.
That it had baseballs on the wall in the shape of the American flag. If you remember that,
yeah, it made me proud to eat there.
I was kind of curious because I remember these restaurants becoming a thing in the 90s, and I was kind of like, is my memory wrong? So I went back and I looked at a whole bunch of them, and sure enough, a lot of them got started in like the 70s or even the early 80s and expanded wildly and became the restaurants we knew by the 90s. So this was very much a new trend at this time.
The 90s was the era of the Hard Rock Cafe and Planet Hollywood and just like critical mass for theme restaurants.
Well, and also, like, before creating Beavis and Butthead, Mike Judge was working at one of these places.
Oh, you're right.
Like, that's why that's in the office.
That's right. And now all these restaurants are dying because no one can afford to go out for a middle-brow meal anymore. No. It's serious. It's like the death of Red Lobster. It's families can't afford these meals.
I went to one over the break, and it's just like, I could have gone anywhere else for this amount of money and not feel this sick. Like, why would I do this to myself?
I don't think it's just that they're too expensive. I think that the health kind of
they're gross.
Thing, people like came to acknowledge, this is where you go if you want to be real fat. And they're also so tacky.
And they legally made them put the calorie counts on the menus because they're so astronomical. They count as like 2.5 meals every single thing you order.
I feel like that's what you accept. If you're going to the Cheesecake Factory, you know you're going to eat there to be a fat turd.
The ice skating rink and the Christmas tree. Once a year. That's the only reason I go.
As Mo showed us, almost everything is deep fried to cover up the low quality of the frozen things they're serving you.
I wince every time that guy bites the fried glass. Yeah.
Like, still hear the glass.
But this is a very well observed, like, Bennigan's or TGI Fridays look, though. Wes Archer was thinking, like, they could have done a better job. I'm like, you guys did a great job.
My favorite image from this episode is Marge looking at an alligator wearing sunglasses.
Well, and Greg Daniels, I think, has a not so secret love of these chain restaurants because on The Office, they got Chili's to be the official. Place
he talks about it on the commentary. This is like pre-airing, I think.
Yeah, he had just gone for the season 2 episode The Dundies. It all takes place in a Chili's, and Chili's made them change the script a little bit because Pam is supposed to get drunk there, but Chili's was like, it's our rule to never overserve alcohol. She would not get drunk. They're like, fine, then we have to change this. But
No one's ever been drunk at a Chili's.
Certainly not.
Tell it to my uncle.
But Chili's was a recurring place on The Office, but that was the Dundies episode was the most use of Chili's, and it was one of the best. Greg Daniels also directed that episode, so he was very in touch with Chili's, and that the shaking, smiling Moe's head is so creepy.
It's twitching, like it's holding a smile. Legitimately hurts.
He can't do it. As I said, he was the most pathetic man in Springfield. He can't be happy. He has to feign it.
We'll see what happens.
And this will be the same smile that will be reused. They just draw it again when Moe is on the Duff calendar in the season 11 episode Pygmalion.
That is the same expression. Wow.
In the episode where he gets a facelift and then a thing hits his face at the end that somehow changes his face back to being the same. And
they make a joke about it.
That's not the same as fixing a story problem to just have Moe speak to camera of like, hey, this is a plot hole. Boom, the end. Like, no. That's a big problem with the era of The Simpsons.
We'll get to it.
That they just accept like, well, if we just make a joke out of the fact we had a bad plot, it's the
same. They did it too much.
Anyway, then we get to Bart's bedtime, which I think Oakley Weinstein got a lot of work. They got a lot out of the kids' bedtime. They enjoyed that
little
stuff.
Parent-child interactions. I like Marge hugging him to figure out his anxiety. Is it swim test anxiety?
So what is that?
I guess you have a test that involves swimming at school where they test your ability
not
to swim.
Take swimming?
No, not in school.
I was almost a lifeguard, actually.
Whoa!
I swam at the Y, but not at school.
So my parents always said, my kids are going to learn two things. They're going to learn how to play an instrument, and they're going to learn how to swim for some reason. And so I took a lot of the summer swimming lessons at the local pool, and I just kept rising up the levels. But whenever we got to the swim test, I did feel swim test anxiety because, I mean, you had to do the strokes in a very specific way, and if you fail, that's like the entire summer down the drain.
Damn.
Yeah, it's harsh.
Yeah, you get that butterfly stroke correctly, man, those abs.
I think the Simpsons really lost sight of this kind of like pleasurable mundanity of just like tucking the kids in for bed. They got too silly in other ways. Like
it's a nice like lower key scene that they can still make jokes in. Mm-hmm. I do miss those.
And I really love the Bart's dream. I didn't get any clips from it because it's really visual. But Bart's dream of all of his friends with their souls and him feeling left out. Like it's kind of a. It feels like how I as a kid would have dreamed of hell of just like in my. Or purgatory of just like in school terms of it.
I appreciate how gay Martin is in this.
Choose Martin. Oh boy, I choose Martin. I like Sherry and Terry as the kind of very creepy Shining-esque twins.
Yeah,
in
they get to be quadruplets in this. I love that. And that this episode, I swear, Sherry and Terry have not had this many lines in like 5 years.
They rediscovered Sherry and Terry in this episode.
It's a great sequence. It's visually inventive.
Yeah,
and
it's beautiful.
And it really drives home the point because you see everybody rowing toward kind of an Emerald City
type
thing.
Is that Oz?
It looks sort of like Emerald City.
But it represents purgatory to me of Bart just rowing
in circles.
Circle place. He can't get out.
I mean, that's kind of like hell, right? Where you can't get out and you can only kind of do the same action over and over again.
He's trapped forever.
It's terrifying.
And then, again, in reused animation stuff, I double-checked this on Frinkiac. They removed a couple frames, but Bart's jump up to scream is his exact scream from Treehouse of Horror 2.
I was wondering that.
It is.
God.
Compared to Freaky
Hack. Oakley and Weinstein love season 3 so much they put part of it in season 7. At least a few frames of it.
One last observation. The music in the dream sequence is really good, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the music in this episode overall is excellent because there's some really good music later on when he's kind of doing the chase for his soul or whatever.
Though apparently Wes Archer wanted the souls to be like kind of transparent, not blue.
I think there was just a messaging error.
He was annoyed by that.
The Simpsons head to Uncle Mo's family feedback. And this is a long clip, but I love
it's all
every
good.
An alligator with sunglasses? Now I've seen everything.
Hiya, folks. Welcome to Uncle Moe's. Aw, look at all the cute little miners.
Whoa, that's Moe, the guy from the ad.
Right this way, Homer.
And he knows my name.
Street signs? Indoors? Whatever.
Now, Rod, you order anything you want for your big 10-0.
$1 million birthday fries!
Uh-oh!
Mo gets so excited when you order his $1 million birthday fries, he just has to celebrate.
Here you go! Here I am! Uncle Mo! Thank you, ma'am! This'll be a treat! Uncle Mo! Here I am! While you eat!
Please take the fries off my head, kid. The basket is extremely hot.
Mo is giving himself too much work to do. Not only is he like the manager, the owner,
he's waiting a lot
doing
of
the
tables
books.
Too.
Yeah, he's also like a part-time waiter when it's somebody's birthday.
Well, he's used to being the bartender and sole proprietor. Yeah, he's not used to having actual waiters.
And he has to give everyone their check because he has to be there to smile at them.
Oh, that's true, man.
Like, Mo knows how hateful he is. He should not have set himself up. Yeah. Yeah,
Mo's working too hard.
It almost is too much ambition for Mo.
Yes. Yeah.
But I love Marge's wholesome reactions to the stuff on the walls. Like that. It was made for moms to go like, oh, how zany.
It is kind of a mean joke, but it's very observational. Like,
well, I mean, in the early 90s, it was kind of quirky. And people living in the suburbs, apologies to people living in the suburbs, might have been going, oh, that's kind of fun. Yeah.
I guess it is a joke at like how Marge is so lame that she thinks this easy stuff is funny. But now it just makes me feel like, I don't know. I love my mom, and she'd have sweet reactions.
It feels like a very King of the Hill joke, actually, with Greg Daniels on board, because it's about a very middle American family being excited by something that's very boring.
Peggy
and
would
not
have
interesting.
That exact same reaction.
I mean, we saw Peggy's theme restaurant when she
that's
took over
true.
Sugarfoots.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Look forward to talking King of the Hill soon.
I mean, Peggy's Sugarfoots.
I remember being like 12, and I was just ragging on suburban nights. I grew up in a suburb, and I remember thinking, oh, that's pretty funny. Look at all those signs. So, you know.
Yeah, I had that same reaction as a little kid, and then I think this joke taught me, like, no, cool. It's cool to not like this and think it's dumb.
Then my soul ossified and I hated everything.
Yeah, and there's no difference between that place and my room except that everything I has a license attached to it. And did anybody try their damnedest to see what was written on the wall?
I
the
could
menu
not.
Items?
Like, two low res.
I got
not
one,
find it.
And it's awesome. Ranch thingy thingies.
Oh, great. They probably spent 5 hours writing that joke, and it is lost in the background.
You just cannot see it.
Yeah.
And this joke officially makes Rod the same age as Bart. You could maybe read Rod is older than Bart because he's drawn taller, but Rod is 10, the same as Bart. Or 10-0, which would make him 100.
The scene, astonishingly, is commonly shitposted and Simpsons memeified. This whole scene with Uncle Mo, or Mo with the basket of fries on his head.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shocked by it. Like, gets more play than Pogs. Like this scene.
No, it should not. Like, I love Million Dollar Birthday Fries.
Yes.
It's great marketing on Mo's part to be like, well, I'll do this song and dance, but they're called Million Dollar because they're probably like $50 for French fries. It's classic like Bennigan's markup on bullshit.
And you don't want to eat fries off an old man's head. I don't understand the appeal.
That's true.
I don't think that's very hygienic.
Well, looking back, I feel bad for the waiters who always had to come out and do their stupid little birthday song because they'd always do they had to clap all together and they had their little song. And I'm sure they sang it like every single night.
That's why when I hear
TGI Fridays, we like to say to you.
Whoa. Oh my God, you actually know the song.
Not really.
The copyright-free TGI Fridays birthday song?
Well, what was... Oh, my God. Actually, an even better gag on chain restaurants is in the Upright Citizens Brigade.
There's a whole episode about chain restaurants. Yeah. That is has my favorite sketch of all time. It is the guy interviewing and going through...
To work at Bennigan's, basically.
All of the steps in order. It's like... I'm going to get ice. Oh, you're just going to make ice levitate using my hands. I will get
you're
ice.
You're just going to put your hands in.
Yeah.
So, well, how many pieces of ice?
Exactly. Like that level of granularity in explaining a task. I'm sorry, please.
I applied to several restaurant jobs, and that's how they... You ever dealt with a 10 top? What's a 10 top? 10 tables. Like, dude, you carry shit and do light math. You need to relax. Yeah. Like, you are not cooking any of this.
Can you
shit.
Handle it, Chris? Can you handle it?
Yeah, I can write down someone's order and bring them food. Jesus Christ. I'm sure you're very good at your job, waiters.
I think the episode is called Invaded by Friars.
And that restaurant was the Rainforest Cafe.
Oh, my God.
Three interviews. God. Didn't get the job. That's serious. That's serious.
You've
got to be on brand at all times, Chris.
What? I could dress up like a gorilla?
Now, as a kid, I definitely would have ordered Southwestern Pizza Fingers.
I want them now so bad.
How are the Southwestern Pizza Fingers?
They're awesomely outrageous.
Oh, these look good. Guilt-free steak fish fillets.
Nah, let me level with you, Marge. That's just our name for bottom-feeding suction eel. You don't want that. Why don't you try Moe's Hobo Chicken Chili? I start with the best part, the neck. And then I add secret hobo spices.
Ooh, très bien.
Yeah. Hey, what the hell are you doing, you little freak? Oh, sorry, kid, sorry. I'm not used to the laughter of children. It cuts through me like a dentist drill. But no, that was funny. That was funny, taking away my dignity like that.
So weird that Wickham doesn't get a line there. Yeah. He's just sitting there in the background. But that Marge saying Très Bien is a callback to Marge from The Way We Was, where she was tutoring Homer in French.
Yeah, it's true. She is a French expert. She throws it out there every now and then. I don't know if they've gone to Paris on the show, but they should go somewhere where both Marge and Bart speak French fluently.
Oh, yeah, Bart is fluent in French. He probably lost it by now.
I would think he's forgotten, yes. But it feels like Wickham should have a line there. I think they only had Wickham there because you need to know he's Ralph's father for a later scene. I forgot to mention it in the $1 million birthday fries, mm-hmm. but that buzzer is the same buzzer for Krusty's secret word in the Wolf episode. Like, loud, that's our secret word of the day.
It's the perfect just jarring buzzer noise. Yeah.
Then I also love when the episode has the A and B plots smashed together like this. Yes. This is beautiful.
I would like to say grace. Lord have mercy on my soul. And Mom's soul, and Dad's soul, and Maggie's soul, and let every soul in Christendom...
Bart?
I can't take this anymore. I want my soul, and I want it now!
Bart, you didn't finish your spaghetti and mo' balls.
Silence, you fool. It can be hard.
Run, boy! Run! Run for your life!
I mean, okay, so we just had the Neglectorinos episode, right?
Yes.
This episode proves that Homer and Marge are neglectful parents because Bart runs away at night from Moe's and
gone all night.
Gone until the morning because he sleeps outside of the android's dungeon many scenes later.
He does not return. And this is in the next episode. They'll just let Lisa run away as well.
That's true.
So, yeah, I think Child Protective Services was right.
I remember thinking, well, I mean, I was left alone to go and do whatever a lot growing up.
Not all night.
In a way that, not all night.
Not all night.
If I ran out of Applebee's, my parents would not just go like,
he'll be back.
Yeah, but when parents, now my friends or parents leave their 5-year-old for like 10 minutes, they have to have a babysitter. I just can't imagine people letting their kids ride around their town at this point alone.
Yeah, things have changed a lot. I mean, I used to go all over the place on my bike and everything. Yeah. As far as I could go.
I love spaghetti and meatballs. Now it sounds a lot more disgusting.
I prefer spaghetti and meatballs. Again, back to King of the Hill.
In my opinion, you need to boil spaghetti. I love spaghetti. And that's another great act break. So the third act is so fucking weird, including the opening with the spaceman. Like, it's like a psychedelic 60s movie of the spaceman coming out of
reference
the door.
To
no, it's an E.T. reference.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay.
It's an E.T., which is great because it's something I didn't pick up on for years.
My first thought was Back to the Future because he kind of looks like he's got the radiation suit on. He's got the deep voice.
That whole emerging from a front door thing is definitely E.T.
It is because other than the mother in E.T., you do not see an adult for the entire film. Mm-hmm. And Peter Coyote eventually talks, but you see him by his keys for the first like 80 minutes. So the first time you see like Elliot sees adult figures, they're in the NASA costumes looking down. It's a very specific scene, and everything he says is not specific at all.
And it's great that he goes from the one you call Milhouse to Bronson voice.
And he remembers that Milhouse had a piece of paper with him. Yeah. You wouldn't forget a thing like that.
I thought he was goofing on him. I always heard it as sarcastic. It was like, oh yeah, you never forget a thing like that.
I mean, number one, he always sounds sarcastic, but number two, this is the second occurrence of this joke in which Luanne Van Houten remembers and he remembers just for the sake of so Bart can know where to go next.
But it's also funny.
It is funny, yeah.
So, though I have a theory about the editing of this episode that I think the Milhouse house scene was originally before their trip to the restaurant, but they wanted the act break. They didn't want it to go before the act break because
it's a daytime scene.
It's a daytime
Weird.
Scene. And it makes much more sense for Bart to run out of Moe's and then be on 3rd Street and run all the way to 200 and whatever street. But instead, he runs from Moe's to Milhouse and then back to downtown where Moe's is for his weird night when he left Moe's at night.
Yeah,
so,
there are a lot of weird time issues that will come up much later, though.
Moe's place closes down in one evening.
Yeah.
Like in 2 hours, Moe's place is gone.
Yeah, Homer seemingly there at 3 a.m.
Yeah, what the hell? But anyway, yes. So then Sherry and Terry again, I think this is the first time they've ever, them being twins actually mattered for like a joke, like a plot point.
Here you go. Here I am. Uncle Mo. Thank you, ma'am. This'll be a treat. Uncle Mo, here I am. I'll eat.
Yay!
Hey, now do it for Terry.
What, it's your birthday too?
We're twins.
Here you go. Here I am. Eat your fries. Eat them.
Here's you.
Oh, jeez. And you got the stink lines and everything.
It's so stinky.
Oh, dude. You did not smile. We eat for free. Come on, Shoshana. Let's roll.
But I sang you the potato stuffings. Come on. I sang you the potato stuffings.
Look at the vein on that guy's forehead. He's gonna blow.
Monkey Mo?
What is it, sweetheart?
My sorry is too cold. My teeth hurt.
Oh, your teeth hurt, huh? Your teeth hurt? Well, that's too freaking bad. You hear me? I'll tell you where you can put your freaking sody, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my freaking ears.
Oh, let's go, dear.
Well, I expect that type of language at Denny's, but not here.
Oh, come on, folks. Wait, please come back. Please, I got a new offer. Whenever Uncle Mo threatens you, you get a free steak fish.
Steak fish.
Never caught that until this viewing.
So much to go over. So number one, Shoshana was the name and still is the name of Jerry Seinfeld's teenage girlfriend. He started dating her when I think he was like 35 and she was 17, so he's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Think of that when you watch Seinfeld. It will ruin it.
It's really weird that that happened and nobody really talked about it.
They were like, he's silly.
It's a smaller world and it wasn't for very long. He was too busy stealing his friend's wife.
He dated her for 4 years.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Hollywood comedians and teenagers.
All right.
Well, and also, though, she was... I looked into her, too. I was like, wow, she started her own fashion business. That's cool. Oh, she's a rich kid. Like, it's like, she started her own business after a loan from her father, the CEO of Infocoms.biz.
Oh, boy.
It's not just any 17-year-old that gets in Jerry Seinfeld's orbit.
That's true.
Yeah, obviously, it was going to be a rich kid who Jerry Seinfeld would meet.
Somewhere in the Hamptons.
So, second thing I want to say is... is that we have our second doppelganger in this episode. So the first one was, we have two Theos. This is Samantha Stanky without braces. I looked at the designs.
Oh, that's who she was.
It's like like the smoke to Samantha Stanky's like scorpion or whatever. It's like she's a different palette with no braces, but it is the same design.
Wow.
They
I
pulled Samantha Stanky for this one. Yeah. Bart's friend falls in love, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Season three.
Late in season three episode. I love the animation on Moe's second song, like, here's your fries, eat them.
And the they had the Uncle Moe's theme in a minor key.
Yes, that
during
was
his freakout,
as the buzzer is going off that he's going to have to sing the song again. They play only hearing it in audio just now. Did I notice?
Me
like,
too.
Oh, that was the Moe song. That was his commercial song.
So, do you want to talk about Denny's?
Well, it's also random to see Krusty and Barney hanging out together. They rarely share scenes together.
That is true. Krusty should not be there.
And for the second episode in a row, there's a joke about Todd being very impressionable. Like, if he hears something or sees something, he will repeat it.
I don't want any damn vegetables.
Out of my freaking ears is actually one of my favorite lines. It's my personal line of the episode in this one.
I did like the knock against Denny's, but was this based on something?
Based on a class action lawsuit. So from Wikipedia, in 1994, Denny's settled a class action lawsuit followed by black customers who had been refused service, forced to wait longer, or pay more than white customers. The $54.4 million settlement was the largest to date under federal public accommodations laws established 30 years earlier. This was a huge deal.
It was huge enough to, like, you didn't just have to know about it. If you ate at Denny's, they had to have a disclaimer inside of their menu.
There was a sign on the door.
Wow.
In
the menu, they talk about, we will not racially discriminate against anybody.
Was this
anybody.
Across the country? Or was this
definitely in Florida. If it happened to me and Bob. Wow. Let's see if we can triangulate it, commenters.
No, I do remember that lawsuit because I think I saw somebody make fun of Denny's when they had, I think the Denny's account had some tweet on like a civil rights holiday. And people like, you know, you were sued
for
hating black people.
Mm-hmm. People forgot about
that. Sure, they're not racist anymore.
They learned a lesson and they lost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. We're expecting a lot from a restaurant that started from a place called Sambo's.
Oh, no.
So then we get to another very visual gag of Bart looking for the street he's going to be on. He has to go over 200 blocks. I love the little animation of him going over the map.
Yeah.
And you can see it on the other side. It's little touches like that they don't do anymore.
They really can't do it anymore. And but the street cleaner joke is so good.
Yes, the street cleaner joke is great. Actually, So Bob and I were not very nice to the video Fall of the Simpsons on our community thing. If you've seen it, the YouTuber Super Eye Patch Wolf did a video called Fall of the Simpsons, which Bob and I didn't completely agree with.
His other videos are really good,
though. Fucking love it. I feel bad now because I hadn't seen Super Eye Patch Wolf stuff at the time. Now I've watched all of his videos, and I like his anime stuff is great.
It's really good.
But in his Fall of the Simpsons videos, though, he says this street cleaner joke is one of his favorites ever because it's so dense. He says it's really five jokes in one. Like, it's Bart is trapped on a long street. His bike is destroyed intentionally by a crazy street cleaner. Then his bike is seemingly fine.
Better
and then
than ever.
Falls apart when he gets on it. And then the street cleaner just maniacally laughs for no reason.
Yes.
And then intentionally, seemingly, crashes his cleaner in a
the first
a train
appearance
station.
Of the Springfield subway.
Yes.
Meanwhile, all of a sudden, Bart's in New York or something.
Yes.
Somebody was speculating that it was a riff on something from Orphan Annie, where the orphans are all racing toward a. From like 3rd Street to like 550th Street or something like that. Huh. So
I think Wes Archer calls out the Scorsese movie Night Shift or Night Hours. Or
Night Hours, the one of the few I've never seen.
It's really good.
It was one of his 80s ones. That, like, I'm less clear on his 80s stuff.
I looked at Chris and he looked at me as if he didn't know. Chris, I thought you liked the man.
I know.
It was like post King of Comedy, I think. That was the movie he made after.
It was like 85. I
really love that movie.
Night Shift, Night Hours, Night Something. It's good.
There's no De Niro in it, so that's why I wouldn't have watched it. I watched all the De Niro ones, and then I did some cleanup afterwards.
Cheech and Chong are in it, in their only good movie appearance, probably.
Bart could have taken the subway, though perhaps he had no money. Or maybe it was so late, the subway had stopped
Why did they need a monorail if they had a subway?
He ran out the door with no money. I didn't carry money when I was 10 years old.
Though I did like the gag of the first time I noticed that it was the 3rd Street station, because Bart is on 3rd Street. So
very, very
extra bit of continuity there.
Detail-oriented.
Actually, though, the money thing you mentioned, Kat, that is actually a really good plot point in this episode, that, like, multiple times Bart's like, well, I don't have $5, or I just got $5. Lisa wants $5. The limited funds of the kids is really key to this episode, I think. I like that a lot. So Wiggum does some police work, which I really just love Dan in this scene. It's really great.
All improvised.
Just realizing, I know you and your wife and every part of you.
Son, you wait here while Daddy tries to talk some sense into this raving derelict.
Oh, yes, I'm on. You son of a bitch.
Slow down.
Get out of there. Humphrey Hitchcock stole every idea I ever had. He came into my room. And they
Who's been stealing your thoughts?
And they put everything. Did you ever read the old curiosity shop? They made that with her, John Gilgood. I have
powers. Hello,
Ralph. Hi, Bart. I know you from school.
Yes. A simple proposition, Ralph. How would you like to make a dollar?
I don't know.
All you have to do is sign a paper that says I can have your soul. I need a soul, Ralph. Any soul. Yours.
Hey, what's going on over there?
Disappears into the sewer
mist.
With
the cat eyes.
Yeah.
I gotta say, living in the Bay Area, there's been a strong uptick in that kind of homeless person lately. Just like, everyone is talking to themselves around me.
I had an experience with that just yesterday.
Oh, really?
But it was actually a surprisingly positive one, because I was having lunch with my friend, shout out to Mara, and we had somebody come in and start raving right behind us at the table. And she said, would you like lunch? And he was like, and he stopped and he goes, yes. And she bought him lunch, and he proceeded to tell her how amazing she was and how nice she was and how beautiful she was.
Okay.
And then he was ushered out eventually.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah.
And at least he got a meal. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And I just love that Wiggum, who is a terrible cop who usually cares about nobody, he's humoring a homeless man for really no reason.
Yeah.
He's just like, well, I got to talk some sense into him.
I've noticed that cops often do that, but it's not humoring. It's actually kind of looking down on them, being like, it's this guy. We get to know all the homeless people. And the people are controlling your thoughts. Okay.
I think Wiggum is setting out on an impossible task, which is why it's funny. It's just like, I'll talk some sense into this person with clear, like, a mental illness or brain damage or something.
One of the scariest things I've seen a cop do in San Francisco, which this is low on cop horrors, but it was, Chris, you were there. We were leaving that theater that we saw the very bad Burt Reynolds film in the
The Red Vic. Yes.
Yeah, the Red Vic. We're leaving the Red Vic, And there was a homeless guy crossing. It was late at night. Homeless guy crossing the street with his shopping cart, but he's kind of going too slow and also kind of going in circles. Then a cop car comes up and stops in the middle of the intersection. A cop gets out, and instead of like being, I thought like, oh, the cop's going to walk him away. He yells and shoves him to the ground. He's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, it was terrifying.
Whoa. I gotta say, I pass several tent cities every day now, and America's not really working out the way we planned.
Yeah. it's They Live, but reality.
Yeah.
Also
the movie was After Hours.
Oh, After Hours. Thank you. Excellent movie. Please watch it. Chris, you have to watch
it.
Tonight, baby.
How have I seen a movie you haven't?
I don't know. I've seen almost all the Best Picture nominees.
Bart is legit scary with Ralph, by the way, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I love his
cat
eyes.
That's very creepy. Mm.
And his cry is repeated almost verbatim.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah, Ralph cries twice.
It's reused from early in the episode. Mm-hmm. Wow, man. Well, so we go back to Moe's for one last thing, which...
yeah, so in the time Bart leaves... Moe has already converted his bar mostly back to Moe's, and Homer is still there.
Yes, it's true.
Presumably Marge went looking for Bart.
Gotta take it all. Get it all out of here.
You know, Moe, you might want to keep the fire extinguishers.
Nah, too many bad memories.
Well, look at the bright side, Moe. You still got us.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, you know, that actually makes me feel a little better.
Why? That was a problem in the first place. You were going broke because we were your only customers. Wasn't that the problem in the first place? That you were going broke? Mo? Mo? Hey, Mo? Oh, you're thinking about all the money you blew, aren't you? What was it? $50,000? $60,000? Mo? Look, maybe it would help if you went over all the mistakes you made from the beginning. Mo?
What?
Let me get a pad.
I love that it's just one shot. It's just one camera angle, and Mo just is sulking. His head is down, and he's sulking.
It only cost $50,000 to start a restaurant in 1995.
That's not too bad, honestly.
Yeah. Well,
converting
to completely convert
his.
Not only that, but he hired a waiter. He hired somebody. He bought a giant
deep flash fryer.
Mm-hmm. He bought ad time.
He completely remodeled the restaurant. I mean,
hired a whole new staff, got new outfits too.
Yep.
And all that crazy crap on the walls could not have been cheap.
No. Nope.
But it was still an old installation. Actually, so he was converting.
And he had to pay
place.
The people to get it all out of there.
I forgot. I want to steer people to something that I wrote for Something Awful. It's an article called Wall Garbage Warehouse, and it's about a retailer that sells things you put on your walls in your theme restaurants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so please look that up. I'm funny, I've heard.
I also do love that scene perfectly undercuts the typical, like, sweet sitcom storytelling.
Yeah.
Because just like, hey, you still got us. And Homer's like, no, that's the whole problem. You've only had us and you're running out of money.
It would have been worse if Homer was the one who convinced Moe to change the bar.
That's
one thing they didn't do.
Yeah, but, well, because Homer loved the dank. He couldn't be against
it. The dank.
And this is one of several episodes in which Moe's bar will change or be redesigned. It's a recurring plot idea.
It's a very malleable place.
Yeah.
Wasn't it completely redesigned? And Flaming Moe's.
Yep, it got changed up for that
it's happened
too.
Before. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe that $50,000 came from his nest egg of Flaming Moe's money.
I think in Flaming Moe's, Moe built a second story because Homer's up in the rafters when Aerosmith is playing, which
true.
Is weird.
Yeah,
it's a great episode. I'm not looking to pick nits here.
So you know what? It's weird that Milhouse's grandma never. I checked on the wiki. She's never made another speaking appearance on the show since this one. Like she is kind of just like Diet Agnes, I suppose.
And she looks just Agnes. Like Milhouse's parents too.
Yeah,
it's a great visual
joke.
She
could be either one of the in-laws. Like she could be the mother of either of them.
Kirk's relationship with her suggests something horrific.
Yeah.
If that's his mother, why would you talk to your mother like that? Why would you talk to your mother-in-law like that?
Yeah.
Another glimpse into Milhouse's somewhat terrifying home life.
Yeah. Well, also,
shut up.
If the grandmother is Kirk's mom, then he married a woman who looked exactly like his mother, like 100% the same. But...
Oh, man, this is getting creepy.
A caller at this hour? You dial 9-1, then when I say so, dial 1 again.
Milhouse, please.
Bart, I can't play now. It's 2 a.m.
Milhouse, I gotta have my soul back. I'll do anything you want.
Milhouse, give him back his soul. I've got work tomorrow.
I'm really sorry. I kind of traded your soul to the guy at the comic book store. But look, I got some cool pogs. Elf pogs. Remember Elf? He's back in pog form.
You traded my soul for pogs? No!
Close that door, you're letting the heat out!
Shut up, shut up, shut up!
I do like Milhouse saying, Elf!
I gotta give that line of the episode there.
That's the joke.
Is that Bart's outrage? You traded my soul for Pogs?
Yeah. Elf Pogs!
Yeah,
like,
they're back. He's back.
We were firmly in Pog craziness in 1995.
Mm-hmm. The 1 year of Pogs.
Yeah.
I was into Pogs quite a bit. Like, yeah, my brother was into them more, but I had a little Pog collection. I like collecting lots of garbage.
I remember the giant... People had, like, closets full of those things.
Ugh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, no, I had Spidey Pogs. I didn't have any Simpsons Pogs.
I still don't really understand
it. Every magazine was giving them away. Nintendo Power was giving them away.
It was an easy item to make. It was like a flat disc made of cardboard.
Well, yeah, you just shove a thing of cardboard, and then you put little circles in it. And you put that in your magazine.
You punch
like
it out.
So many fads to follow was banned from schools because kids were getting into fights and Pogs were
gambling.
Being stolen and gambling. I feel like this was the writer saying Pogs are going away in like 6 months. And they were just having a little, they were goofing on it by putting Alf, who of course was from the 80s. And
he's in 1995, back. Alf nostalgia was the stupidest thing.
No one was
just like, who cares about Alf?
Let's be honest, it's still pretty freaking stupid.
It's awesome.
Yes. Is there an Alf calendar back there? I don't want to turn around.
Indeed.
Is it still there?
Yes, okay. It's still there from 1989.
This episode reminds me of Round Springfield in that not only is there a Pog reference, the plot is resolved by one of the Simpson characters buying an item from Comic Book Guy for the other person, for the other sibling.
It's the exact same ending, but I think Alf Pogs is one of the greatest gifts the Simpsons has given pop culture commentators, at least, because it is a perfect encapsulation of the unwanted return of an unpopular thing in a silly new medium. Like, anytime if a TV show comes back as a video game, if a video game comes back as a phone app,
or like a Heathcliff app.
Yeah, all that stuff. You're like, you can all. It's so easy to say he's back in Pog form.
The saddest thing is, I walking through the mall. We cut through to come to Chris's place to record. There's an entire wall taken up by an interactive like Peanuts version of Candy Crush. It's like, is this where these characters are now?
Whoa!
Well, because there's like too many empty shops now. Yeah,
you can still go by the fucking Zynga building a couple blocks away from here. Mm. Zynga, the mobile app developer, on their sign glowing, it's like Words with Friends 2, Wizard of Oz slots, and it's just Meredith. It's like the Wicked Witch of the West from 1939's face on it. Like, this is your biggest new thing.
I feel bad for saying this because a friend of mine works for them, but Jam City has a random Snoopy game.
Jam City.
That they managed to turn in, they managed to get into like the top 50 like most popular mobile games.
I gotta know what this is.
Is this the puzzle game I'm talking about?
But that, you just take a recognizable property, even if it's old, and you attach it to a game, and people go like, I know what that is. I'll play that.
My mom doesn't have to read the description.
I'll put money into it. Ding, ding, ding.
Well,
ding.
There, I don't know if there's been an Alf app that really works.
Oh, but I just realized I make the podcast version of Alf Pogs.
Yeah, that's true.
Whoa. You're not allowed to agree with me on that.
The Simpsons is still here, though. It hasn't gone away.
I really just meant Retronauts.
That'd be like Snoopy Pop. This looks adorable.
We talked for an hour about Animaniacs games recently. So
that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. But, God. Okay, so my only issue with Comic Book Guy in this episode is that he should know who Bart Simpson is by name by now.
Yeah.
Like, he later will. Actually, he'll
maybe
even
that's
be
why
like,
he valued the soul.
That, well, later he won't take a check from him.
I also think he didn't really want to buy a soul, but he had a bunch of Alf Pogs he wanted to offload and throw them away.
It was probably right next to the Hamburglar Adventure.
Ooh, the answer is fries.
If you are waiting for the high and lowest signing, it has been moved to the Springfield Coliseum.
Please, you have something of mine on a little piece of paper.
Oh, so you're Bart Simpson, eh? Well, since my breakfast burrito is congealing rapidly, I will be blunt. You're too late. I sold your soul last night. Yes, yes. I found a buyer right away for that item.
Who?
I am not at liberty to divulge the party, but they were most interested in having possession of little boy's soul. excuse me, no banging your head on the display case, please. It contains a very rare Mary Worth, in which she has advised a friend to commit suicide. Thank you.
So he not only sells the Mary Worth phone, he also sells rare Mary Worth unprintable comics.
So he really loves Mary Worth.
It's just a funny, it's like one of the funniest, but like, I'm sure it's fine, but it's inexplicable how Mary Worth has existed for
he loves comic strips from the 1930s.
Any of this, and it's a funny joke that like the high and lowest convention is so popular, it had to be moved to a stadium.
Well, I also love that he's a big high and lowest fan, too. The same, like, are you the creator of high and lowest? Because you're making me laugh.
Yes. created by...
right.
Comic book guy is a huge comic strip fan.
I am a big comic strip fan. I love them, but they're irredeemable and hard to defend. And doing research on High and Lois for this, it was a comic that I liked. I had no idea. They're both done by Beetle Bailey and High and Lois.
Beetle Bailey's sister is Lois.
Lois is Beetle Bailey's sister.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the Walkerverse.
I knew what a lot about the Walkerverse. Yes, yeah. I read several. Well, it was
you
also...
You want to talk nepotism, go through the comics page and look at something that's existed for 90 years with no fans, and now it's written by two children of the person who created it.
Hagar the Horrible.
Yes. Well, you know, the weirdest thing with Mort Walker in reading his collections, which would be the only books I take out of the library as a kid, but is... When I came to realize, like, whoa, he got real horny. Like, especially in Beetle Bailey, he introduced a sexy secretary.
Oh, you're right.
Would just give the old general a boner all the time.
Yeah.
Like, cartoonists, they get too horned up, man. We need to get saltpetered to these cartoonists.
Recently, I found out through Twitter that the author of the Berenstain Bears, I think they're both deceased now, Stan and Jan Berenstain, before that book, they wrote a bunch of, like, sexy joke like comic books.
Oh,
sort of like almost like Playboy comics or whatever.
Playboy comics.
Yeah,
still can accept that pronunciation. It's very hard for
Berenstain.
It's very hard for me.
Berenstain.
I hate this alternate universe I'm stuck in.
Yes.
I want to be in the Sinbad Shazam universe.
So then we get a very sweet ending that I think kind of plays fast and loose about, like, is there God? Is there not? Who's to say?
Are you there, God? It's me, Bart Simpson. I know I never paid too much attention in church, but I could really use some of that good stuff now. I'm afraid. I'm afraid some weirdos got my soul and I don't know what they're doing to it. I just want it back. Please? I hope you can hear this. You bought this?
With the change in my piggy bank.
There's no change in your piggy bank.
Not in any of the ones you know about.
Please. Thank you.
Happy to do it. But you know, Bart, some philosophers believe that nobody is born with a soul, that you have to earn one through suffering and thought and prayer, like you did last night.
Uh-huh.
The bit of uncomfortableness when he's like trying to swallow the paper. There's like a bit of like a choking thing going on. But yeah, are you there, God? It's me, Bart. Is a parody of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, the 1970 Judy Blume book. I prefer Super Fudge.
Yes, Jelly Belly, the one set in Fat Camp.
Actually, I didn't read any of that crap. I read Ramona and her mother and all that garbage.
Hmm. I read the Ramona ones. Yeah. I didn't read those.
Indeed, in the cupboard of GTFO. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it.
I remember one of the Ramona books that her dad lost his job.
Yeah,
caused a lot of pain, and then their cat died in another one.
Nothing but tragedy.
I liked how philosophical. I liked how philosophical Lisa is in this one,
and
it really fits with her character because she's a very smart and thoughtful individual. And I actually strongly agree with what she says, that you have to kind of earn your soul through, thought, introspection.
You're not just given it at the start of your life.
She will be a Buddhist in 6 years, so
that's true,
six seasons, rather.
Well, and this also fits with Greg Daniels being a philosophy dork as well, like these kind of lines, which for a second I almost thought, like, oh, is this... I got confused that I was like, oh, he created The Good Place. Like, no, it was his co-creator on Parks and Rec, Mike Schur, who created The Good Place.
I didn't know that.
Which is all about ethics and morals and the soul.
Is it about ethics and games journalism? That's all I care about.
No, unfortunately not. But
it's very
important. It is all about the Jacksonville Jaguars, which man, Cat, I gotta say, really sucked for two. I don't care about football like you do, but boy, would it have been nice if the Jaguars actually made it to a Super Bowl.
Suck for once.
Yeah,
it almost happened.
If they just... I hate seeing Bill Belichick happy. It makes me so mad.
But if the Jaguars had made it and the Vikings hadn't, I would have had to kill you.
Oh,
the
geez.
Only time I've seen like Bob just back away from the microphone.
Bob, shut down.
I'm quietly protesting this. This is a Simpsons podcast. We talk about the Berenstain Bears, the Simpsons,
Hi, Lois,
Sergeant Bilko, but no football.
Okay, but so there is a sweet ending that's all visual, too,
and
of just
Nancy
Bart
Cartwright's
dreaming
acting.
Of going to heaven.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Greg Daniels points out this episode implies that Bart dies because he makes
died
it to that
sleep.
Golden kingdom.
Yes,
he died
true.
In his sleep.
Well, but in this world, religion is interesting because, like I said, God literally exists and is interventionist. And we see that there is actual honest to God, probably proof, that Bart loses his soul.
Yeah, and got it back.
God
it,
controls yeah. automatic doors.
And the sweet touch, instead of like him having to prove to the audience that his soul is back, you just see the animals sleeping next
that
to him.
That was the first time I really got it. That right. It meant
wow.
that
yeah, letting you know everything is fine now.
Yeah. Yes, it's really beautiful.
Somewhere a door is opening in the Quickie Mart.
It must have really sucked for the Oakley Weinstein to be working on season 7 and then lose one of their best writers so early in Greg Daniels.
Is Hurricane Nettie the same season?
Next season.
Yep.
So there's a couple of very spiritual episodes, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's also She of Little Faith with Lisa being the heretic in that one.
Season 13? That's an Al Jean, Rooney.
Oh, yeah. That's the Buddhist one. What's the one where they find the angel?
Lisa the Skeptic.
Season 9. Getting that one confused.
How dare you?
I want to run this by you. So I've seen multiple people suggest that the Seven Deadly Sins is in this episode. Yeah. Have you seen this?
Seven Deadly Sins are present in every work of fiction ever.
It's sort of like the monomyth in which you can apply it to everything. Yeah. It sounds smart. But please go on, Kat. I want to hear this.
Yeah. All right. Well, they're saying Lust is Homer and Marge remembering how they used to make out to the song.
Yeah, we're at our first stretch.
Sure.
Gluttony was, of course, Mo turning his bar into a restaurant with the fried stuff and everything.
Homer eating spaghetti and Mo-balls.
Greed, Reverend Lovejoy with his coins.
Mm-hmm. Or Mo with turning his back on the dank.
True. Sloth, Barton Mills' house slacking off and cleaning the organ. Yeah, a little bit of a stretch right there. Wrath, Reverend Lovejoy gets angry at being fooled.
Okay.
Envy, Mo envies the profits of family restaurants. Lisa wants $5 after Bart tells her he had $5. Bart envies the kids in the dream for their souls. Pride, Bart being too proud to believe that he has a soul.
I see. Well, it turns out you can apply 7 very broad concepts to almost any work of fiction.
I would say the wrath more is Mo yelling at the kid whose soda hurt their teeth.
That's true.
That's more wrath.
What about the sin of envy?
Of envy. That's all well and good for sheep, but what are we to do?
That's a good note to wrap up on. Thanks for listening, folks. This has been Talking Simpsons, a great episode. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and my other podcast is Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcatcher. These guys have been on it recently. We talked about Animaniacs games for an hour, but also recently, Henry, he headed up an episode about Spider-Man
the
games.
Whip, yep.
Yes, from 1982 to 1996. So we cover a ton of games. Go to Retronauts.com or find Retronauts on any podcast machine, and you will download it and you'll love it.
We're saving the Neversoft Spider-Man game for part 2.
Yes.
But, I'm going to I want to hear from Kat what her plugs are, our special guest.
All right. Well, I'm on Twitter at @_Cabot. Don't worry. I won't make fun of your religion if you come and follow me. I like people of all different backgrounds and things like that. Also, I run US Gamer, which is a website about video games. Nice. And we have a podcast called Acts of the Blood God, which is our RPG podcast. It's kind of like Retronauts, but for RPGs. And you should subscribe to us. It's really good. I like that show. And I'm with Nadia Oxford. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that show a lot, too.
Thank you.
And so I'm HENERAYG on Twitter, and you can find me there. That's where I tweet about any new announcements in the world of Simpsons, which that includes our first live show, which now is available for download at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. And we'll maybe put it in the free feed. Anyway, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons is what supports me and Bob doing this full time. We just hit our funding milestone to start a whole nother podcast. We're getting to work on that now. Look forward to it. It'll be free, but also available a week early on the Patreon. And Futurama is coming soon.
That's right. You voted for it, and you ignored me saying vote for King of the Hill, but we'll get to it, and I'm still excited about Futurama.
And Futurama Season 1 will be exclusive to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
But more importantly, when's the Star Trek Animated Series season?
Nobody can spare 13 weeks.
But yes, follow all those things, and thanks for your support, folks.
Yeah, and Laser Time is another show, if you have any more time. But you should definitely check it out, because I hereby promise you, banging my arm on the table, I'm going to do an episode about comic strips, because, man, I love comic strips more than I love most. I think more than I love comics before I was 10. I collected those.
You've been dreaming of a comic strips episode for a while.
It's an audible medium. It's going to be difficult to do, but I think Michael and I spent like an hour laughing at Toon Lagoon, the Universal Studios Island of Misfit IP, the Kathy Ack Cafe, the Dagwood Sandwich Shop.
You mean Ask Your Grandma Island?
Yeah.
You're going to have to steal that bit.
No, that's not Prince Valiant. That's the Shadow. I hate my kid.
$20, that joke is yours.
Jesus. Yeah, so I swear we'll do one on that. We have a bunch of other fun episodes up for you now, including one we recently did on Weird Al. Celebrating the work of Weird Al, sort of outside music.
Mm. I cannot hear. I listened to Beat It recently, like on an airplane. I put on a collection of 80s music videos just to watch something on a long flight. And when Beat It, the music video came out, I was like, oh, wow, I only remember the lines from Eat It.
Yep.
And I only remember the Eat It music video. And now all these jokes from the Eat It music video.
It's more plausible than hearing Michael Jackson sing about street fighting. I mean,
yeah,
seriously.
But yes, all that and more. 30-20-10, a show where we look 30, 20, and 10 years back in time. If you're a Simpsons fan, I had to rewatch that 90s show, one of the most hated episodes from Simpsons fans. And I came away with a much different opinion this time.
We'll get to it in several years.
Yes, but we devoted a couple minutes to it on our shows. Almost interesting. You might like it more than you think. But yes, that and Video Game Apocalypse, our weekly video game podcast. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with Lisa the Vegetarian. A great episode. See you then.
Infotainment.